Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across Northern British Columbia. Our podcast is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, which is a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from local health authorities. We are casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kleidlay-Tenay First Nation. And hosting today's episode are Dr. Sheer Chewy and myself, Deanna Danskin.
Welcome back, everyone, to Season 3 of QualityCast North. We have a new season, new original theme music, and some fabulous guests lined up for you. We're your co-hosts. I'm Sheer Chewy.
I'm Deanna Danskin.
So to kick off Season 3, we're back in Prince George and in the ultrasound department at the University Hospital of Northern British Columbia. Ultrasound departments everywhere have never been busier, and not just pregnant mothers, but patients with complaints involving all parts of the body visit the department every day. Ultrasound technology is one that has evolved and improved exponentially within the digital revolution modern society has witnessed over the last three decades. And the technologists who perform the ultrasound scans, also known as sonographers, are highly trained healthcare professionals. But this doesn't mean their jobs are easy. Like anyone working in healthcare today, there are still plenty of challenges and opportunities for quality improvement. To talk about their recent ultrasound QI project are our two guests today, Karina Hansen, an ultrasound technologist and supervisor of the UHNBC ultrasound department, and Carly Finney, a Northern Health Quality Improvement Facilitator also based at UHNBC. Welcome to the show, both of you. Thanks for joining us today.
So one of the things we enjoy on this podcast is hearing our guests' stories on how they arrived doing what they do. So before we get into your actual QI project work, I'm going to ask that you tell us a little bit about your background, kind of where you grew up, and how your career path led you to where you are in your current role. So we'll start with Carly, and then we'll move to Karina.
Okay. I'm Carly Finney, and I grew up in Kelowna, and I started my career with Northern Health 10 years ago as a registered dietitian in clinical roles. I held a bunch of different clinical roles, and then the last role I held prior to this role, it was as the coordinator of patient food services at the University Hospital of Northern British Columbia. And you know what? It was in that operational leadership role that I learned that I really enjoyed working on projects to improve the quality of the services that we provide. And then I had this opportunity to pivot my career into focusing more specifically on that quality improvement as my current role as the quality improvement facilitator. And my current role sees me supporting leaders and staff at the front line of healthcare to improve the services that they provide.
Awesome. I've been with Northern Health for 10 years as well. Started at the same time. So we'll move along to you, Karina. So why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of where you're from and your career path to where you're working today?
Okay, well, I'm actually from Dawson Creek, so Northern BC through and through. My background is primarily clinically based. So I attended the Diagnostic Medical Sonographer Program through SATE. I graduated from there in 2012. I worked in Calgary for a couple of years at a clinic. We moved back to Northern BC, so to Prince George in 2015, where I started working at UHNBC. I'd always been drawn to hospital work. I find it really interesting. And I've always been interested in how to improve the ultrasound services. I then had the opportunity to transition into the lead ultrasound tech role. With this role came a lot of opportunities. And I had a lot of support from my management team. And through their support, I was able to start engaging in QI initiatives. So this led to the development of this appendix QI project, which involved collaboration between the QI team, the radiologist team, and the sonographers at UHNBC. Interestingly enough, since the completion of this project, I've been given an opportunity to take on a new challenge in service improvement. And I'm currently sitting in a term role as a lead clinical coordinator for the surgery center transition as it moves from a private
private surgery center to a Northern Health entity.
Good for you. That sounds like a very challenging role. Moving private to public and surgical services are very complex. Yeah, good for you. So I'm going to continue, Karina, with the next question. So can you tell us a little bit about the teams of people that you work with? I mean, you can, like, I think we're specifically talking about the ultrasound project, mm-hmm. but if you want to talk about the surgery center too, you're welcome to.
So I find in both of my roles, here as the lead clinical coordinator and in my permanent role as the lead ultrasound tech, I work quite closely with frontline on the day-to-day operations, providing either ultrasound or surgical services to the public. This includes your sonographers, nurses, clerical and other support services, as well as your radiologists, surgeons, and your management and leadership teams. I've been really fortunate to work with some great teams, and the main thing I continue to see is the value that each role has to making the services delivered a success. So a housekeeper's work is just as important and crucial as the surgeon's. For example, you have all these layers of people filling these roles, and one really cannot happen without the other. So the team dynamic is extremely important.
How about you, Carly? What kind of teams do you work with?
I have a really cool job. I get to work with primarily with frontline leadership and also frontline staff. But I get to work with teams literally right across the continuum of care, ranging from, you know, acute and hospital services, which is kind of the team that we were working on here in this project, but also working with, you know, teams in long-term care, teams in community care. Heck, I could even be working with a team in IT to improve their IT services. So I'm really glad of that. I have a lot of variety in my work, and I see a lot of different areas and different facets of the healthcare system that way. I also get to work with other regional supporting teams. So those are teams like organizational development, human resources, you know, student practice education, evaluation, the list goes on. And the work I do with them is more about trying to find connections and links with their work and the work I do as a quality improvement facilitator and the teams at the front line who are providing care, the teams that I support, to find those connections and to pull in resources and supports for those frontline teams. And so, yeah, a large part of the work I do is in just creating those connections and trying to resource the work that the frontline needs.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think it really builds on what Karina was just saying about how there's so many layers in healthcare and they're all super important, whether it's the frontline staff versus clerical versus IT, obviously is very important. So yeah, that's really interesting. So I want to talk a little bit more about like what an ultrasound is itself. So I'm going to ask Karina, the ultrasound expert in the room. So ultrasound, most people probably know it as the tool that scans a pregnant mother to show the unborn baby before birth. But what other areas of the body do we use ultrasound scans for? And what types of diseases do you commonly encounter?
So that's a really great question. Ultrasound always does seem to be connected to babies, and we do scan a lot of babies. In reality, though, it is only a small part of the daily workload in the ultrasound department. So the ultrasound department really does a multitude of tests. They're great for basically anything soft tissue in the body. So it includes, you know, we'll do ultrasound guided biopsies. We'll do echocardiography. So the heart scans, screening for heart disease. We're a really great screening tool as we can look at all the organs and, you know, your liver, kidneys, even your veins and arteries, looking for blood clots or plaque, things like that. The great thing with ultrasound is we're really portable. So if you have someone who's unwell and can't travel, the ultrasound tech can take the machine and go to the patient to give that service bedside in the hospital. And there's no radiation exposure. So it's a really great tool for a first look, so to speak, to see if there's more diagnostic imaging that is needed. Also to help with follow-ups. You know, if someone has a CT and they say, see a cyst on the liver, then instead of doing another CT, we can just follow that up with ultrasound and reduce that radiation exposure. So quite useful for basically the entire body.
So what organs? Everything.
Everything, okay. That's right.
Well, that's great to hear. And I wonder whether we could now just turn a little bit away from that broad spectrum for which ultrasound is used to the subject of your QI project, which was ultrasound scanning of the appendix. Now, why is ultrasound used for scanning the appendix in particular, Karina?
Well, ultrasound is a really great first choice. As they say, ultrasound is cheap and fast. and again, like I mentioned, there's no radiation. So a large volume of patients that are questioning a positive appendix are the younger age group. So you have your pediatric patients, and you don't want to send them through a CT machine if you don't have to. So we try to use ultrasound initially. Even if you can't necessarily see the appendix right away, you can look for secondary signs of inflammation, free fluid, things like that to help guide the diagnosis, and also by keeping the patients, I guess, essentially safer from having to run through CTs or say having an MRI where you're in the machine for 40 minutes, where it's a lot of people have a kind of a hard time tolerating. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, so clearly there's some advantages for using ultrasound in this context.
Mm-hmm.
And with regards to scanning the appendix, what was the problem you and the team were facing with appendix ultrasounds? And what was the clinical impact of that problem? Carly, can I ask you?
So the problem was really that we couldn't see appendixes. The sonography team wasn't actually all that successful in finding them on ultrasound. And the problem with that is that, being that ultrasound is first line choice for a lot of patient populations, when we don't see them on that first scan, this can delay the diagnosis and ultimately delay the treatment, which causes the patient to be in more pain for longer. And it also might mean that they have to come back for more tests, come back to the ER because they're still in a lot of pain, which ultimately just adds burden in the healthcare system.
Well, I would agree with that. But why is finding the appendix so difficult, particularly with ultrasound, Karina?
So kind of following up with what Carly said, I think our initial visualization rates on our baseline data was 34% visualization rates. The national standard based on literature was 40 to 70% visualization. So we were below average for sure. Ultrasound isn't really known for its bowel scanning abilities. I remember in school basically being told, if it's bowel, don't try, you're not going to see anything. If you see something, it's not going to be enough information to be able to make a clinical diagnosis. That, however, has been changing. There's been a lot of advancements in the ultrasound machines, and the literature on bowel scanning through ultrasound is becoming more prevalent. So bowel scanning is out there. I know there's a great program at Foothills Hospital in Calgary. They have an entire bowel ultrasound department, essentially.
What did your improvement project actually involve, and what did you aim to achieve? Let's start with you, Carly.
Sure, yeah. So the project's aim was to increase the rate of ultrasound visualization of the appendix from our baseline of 34% to 75% of studies performed at the University Hospital of Northern British Columbia by April 2023. This actually involved our project. We selected the model for improvement to guide our project. The model for improvement involves using small iterative tests of change, something we know as a plan, do, study, act, or PDSA cycle. So we had meetings with the sonography team, the full sonography team, as well as the supervisor and radiologist. And we got together and crowdsourced change ideas that we would test in these short kind of bursts. So a few of those were education for sonographers, bowel, and Karina could tell you way more about this than I can. and then we tested also this cue sheet. So it's really just a piece of paper with a diagram of bowel and appendix, where you can find it, as well as a few other things. We tested different probe selection, different patient positioning, and some others as well. And so we just did that iteratively for a period of about 12 months.
Once you set out on your project, what was initial progress like? And this is a loaded question, but did you encounter any challenges? Of course you did, because everyone encounters challenges in quality improvement. But what were they, and how did you respond to them, Karina?
Well, it was quite amusing. After our first month, the appendix visualization skyrocketed, like astounding numbers. And then the sonographers took this and they ran with it. They were feeling good. They're like, yeah, we got this. And then the data came in from the second month and the visualization plummeted. You know, kudos to them though. They carried on and they kept their end target, which they had decided initially, I believe, was 65%. And then they upped it after their first month of doing so well to 75%. And but they kept it and they just carried on. They didn't take it too personally. We provided an in-service with the bowel anatomy, gave more written literature to those who like reading, just tried to provide educational material for all the different learning styles. And a big thing that we noticed when the challenges was that some months the scan volume was quite low. So, you know, if you only have five appendix scans and you miss three of them, it just really impacts your stats. So this sparked a team scanning approach where, when feasible, if a tech was scanning an appendix, whether they found it or not, they would offer or ask if another tech was available to come in and take a second look. This allowed for a lot more scanning practice and hands-on, even when we had the low volume, which the techs found to be, seemed to be one of the things that had the biggest impact on the perpetual learning cycle of this whole, behind the whole idea of improving the visualization.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Carly, to that?
So when the scan volumes were very low, in that it was actually over summer, incidentally, the techs decided to start this, what we're calling double scanning procedure. You know, we didn't want to give up, you know, so early. We actually had initially set the project timeline to complete in November of 2022. And, you know, we had these several months of very low volumes, and it wasn't going the greatest in terms of our visualization. So we, you know, we stepped it up with some of these other techniques like Karina mentioned, but then we also expanded the project timeline another 6 months. So we went from an original timeline of November 2022 to expanding it to April 2023, just to give ourselves that extra time to hopefully drive the visualization.
Oh, that's great. And so at the end of the project, were you ultimately successful and did you reach your goal? Karina?
I think the project was very successful. Like I said, we started off with a visualization rate of around 34% and ended up at 76.9. Right. So almost 77. So the sonographers, they were so engaged in this that we met every month with them, and the response from them was incredible. Actually, they really took it on and they surpassed their end goal. And there was a few months there where they were not sure if they could do it, but like I said, they just persevered, and I'm beyond impressed with them. Actually, they were happy with their accomplishment. There was a huge celebration at the end, and they're driven to keep going. They have maintained the use of that specialized tech sheet. They continue the double scanning technique. They are we're planning on doing a kind of post 6 month follow-up of data collection to see where we are. And they're, as far as they said at the meeting, that they want to maintain that and maybe even try to surpass their final goal of 76.9 visualization. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And that's an excellent result, considering the slightly shaky start that you got off to in the end to actually finally reach your goal. And the team must have been absolutely over the moon about that by the end.
Yeah, that's so cool that not only to meet your objective, like the metric side of it, but it's so nice to hear that the team is engaged and they were really, sounds like they had a sense of pride and accomplishment and making things better and all being able to participate in that. So that's really cool. So what do you think, I'm going to start with Carly. What do you think, Carly, were some of the key factors that led to the success of this project?
Okay. So I really felt like the strong triad leadership that we had, where we involved Karina as the clinical supervisor, we involved a radiologist, and myself as the quality improvement facilitator. This really just gave us the ability to spread the work of quality improvement. So, you know, Karina really coordinated with the team, communicated to her team of sonographers. Our radiologist partner was really instrumental in bringing some of that medical diagnostic best practice, as well as some very helpful hands-on sonographic skill. And then myself to support, you know, the data management, as well as the management of our PDSA and tracking of our PDSA cycles. And then another piece that was really a key factor was the support that I actually received from the PQI team through the Virtual Action Learning Series program. So I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before, but for myself, this was actually a learning project. And the PQI Virtual Action Learning Series is a kind of a stepped, staged learning program that supports both physicians, but also some, you know, health authority partners to learn quality improvement in a practical and hands-on experience. And so I really benefited from having the PQI team coach me along with some of those pieces.
Awesome. And how about yourself, Karina?
The engagement from the sonographers was, I just can't stress enough how important their buy-in to this was, because ultimately they were doing the hands-on work. We were providing the tools for them, and that knowledge and that improvement had to then come from their day-to-day work. And the UHNBC sonographer team, we are so lucky to have them. They are keen. They are willing to put themselves out there. Even when they had kind of some poor results, they were able to share their struggles, share some thought processes and ideas on what might help them improve. And obviously it worked, because the numbers show that there was just some phenomenal knowledge and some phenomenal visualization improvements. I don't know how else to say it. So yeah, the multi-team approach, and then just having the buy-in from the sonographers was great.
Yeah, I think they deserve some kudos for that too, because it's challenging to do improvement work on top of a very busy operational workload. Yeah, everyone in medical imaging is very busy in the day-to-day, and then you add on that extra little bit to try to make it better, and sometimes it can seem like a big ask, but that's really great. And round of applause to them for
absolutely
being so enthusiastic to take this on, and you know, it paid off in the end, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's next for this improvement work, and how are you thinking about maximizing the impact on the broader, wider healthcare system?
So, you know, as I had mentioned, the sonographers are continuing on with those practices that were developed during this QI project, being the double scanning technique, having that worksheet, sharing the knowledge. We have students, ultrasound students, going through that department regularly, so they're getting exposure as well. And interestingly enough, one of the sonographers who is part of this initiative has now gone over to CNC and in a term teaching role. And they are in the process of developing and going to start implementing into the CNC sonography program an appendix scanning section in their learning plan somewhere. I'm not sure what that looks like or how it's built in, but that's going to continue on now. So now you have this learning that happened at UHNBC transferring to our students who are being trained in the north, and a lot of them stay in the north, as well as having the hands-on scanning when they come through UHNBC for their practicums, and as well shared with the regional team. So that information was put out and shared on the medical imaging regional side and shared with sonographers at other locations in Northern Health, so they also can learn from what we did and hopefully take that and see if they can make it work at their sites.
Yeah, that's cool. And just so our listeners know, CNC is our local college. So it's the technical college where there's a program where where students learn to be the ultrasound techs and they learn sonography. So they'll be getting this technique right from the beginning. So that's really cool. And in our health authority, UHMBC, where this project happened, is only one of many sites that do ultrasound. So there's an opportunity to, you know, reach a bunch of different places with this work spreading to different departments. On the subject of QI more in general, what do you think are some of the constraints that prevent more hospital departments from embarking on these type of QI projects? And what can leaders do to encourage more QI projects like this one to occur?
Well, truly and honestly, I think capacity at the front line, both of the staff, but also capacity of those frontline leaders is the biggest constraint right now. We're kind of facing unprecedented times in healthcare with staffing shortages, as well as, you know, increasing healthcare needs of our population as we have an aging population. We're just asking a lot of our healthcare workers, also of the leaders. And though many of the teams and leaders that I've spoken to in frontline, they want to improve their services, they just have so much work cut out for them that, just to keep the lights on, just to keep the service running, that they often just feel they don't have time, they don't have capacity. And so I think what we can do is rely on our senior leadership actually to help us create space for the front line. And how are they going to do that? Well, I really believe that senior leaders have a hard job. Their job is to actually set priorities. They have to make some tough decisions. What is it that we're going to focus on? If everything is a priority, then nothing is really a priority. So we really need senior leadership to set us some clear and realistic priorities and goals to create that space for everyone working at the front line to have the ability to focus on improving the service we provide.
And you're absolutely right. All the front lines are really under it at the moment. It's making it very difficult to find that time and that space, as you said, Colin, for quality improvement, which makes your achievement even more amazing, actually, and the results that you achieve. So kudos to you for that. So we're actually nearing the end of the interview now, and we have just a couple more questions for you, which we actually ask all our guests. How do you like to relax outside work, and what do you like about living and working in Northern BC? And I'm going to ask that to you, Karina, first, and then Carly.
Okay, so I'm not sure if I ever actually relax, but I do really enjoy wine, and I like hanging out on my little farm. I seem to collect animals and spend money on my kids and their horses, if those are hobbies, I don't know. I absolutely love Northern BC. I have no plans on ever moving. There's lakes, hiking, hunting, camping. We have four beautiful and distinct seasons. And there are here specifically in Prince George, there's a lot of opportunities that you can find in larger centers, but without living in chaos. So I think it's a great place to raise my family. I honestly just wish I had listened to my husband and moved here sooner when he suggested it. Yeah.
So what about you, Colin?
Well, as I said earlier, I'm originally from Kelowna, and I moved here 10 years ago after doing my training actually in Saskatoon. And, I just love it here. I'm not leaving. between having affordable housing that kind of leaves me enough resources to go on like multiple vacations in a year, and also just incredible access to the outdoors. I'm a huge mountain biker, backcountry skier. And so being able to get out my door and be in the mountains in 20 minutes is amazing. But probably more than any of that is actually what keeps me here is the community I found. I found Prince George to be like super welcoming to, at the time, a young professional. I've just
still young.
Thank you.
And I've just found such a great community of like-minded people around all the hobbies that I like to do. So, you know, those mountain biking and skiing, yoga. So.
Excellent. Well, those are fantastic answers. And I'm pretty sure we're going to get a rush of new people in Prince George after your answers to that question. So thank you.
Yeah, and it got me excited for skiing. Karina mentioned the distinct seasons, and obviously this is a podcast. You can't see what we're looking at, but there's like beautiful red and yellow trees outside right now. It's like such a beautiful time of year here. We get a really nice fall. And then, yeah, winter comes. There's lots of skiing. So that's exciting. So as we draw our podcast to a close, you can hear the clothing music coming, which means that we're, yeah, getting to the end. So thank you so much, Karina and Carly, for joining us today to talk about this really cool and inspiring improvement project. As a token of our appreciation, we do have for you today our exclusive Quality Cast North mugs. They're just over there. If any of the listeners would like to know any more about today's guests or their project or our PQI program, you can find the show notes on our website, which is nhpqi.ca. You can also find links to other episodes as well as storyboards and other resources. And if you enjoyed today's show, you can always subscribe via Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. So until our next episode, I bid you farewell. I'm Deanna Danskin.
And I'm Shua Chewy.
This is Quality Cast North.
You've been listening to Quality Cast North. Today's episode was hosted and co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Deanna Danskin, with technical support from Matt Walker. Original music by Daniel Chewy and artistic support by Reggie Goodine. Further information on the content of today's episode is available with the show notes on our website, nhpqi.ca. Quality Cast North is recorded on the traditional territory of the Clayclaytonais First Nation. If you enjoyed today's interview, check out our other episodes available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.